All right, we're here for another episode of Confessions of a Street Broker, and joining me today is a longtime Battlefield competitor and friend, Corbin Blunt with Lee & Associates. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Longtime listener, first-time caller, if you will.
So, we just got done spending about 2 hours looking at deals and stuff. And so we're glad to have you in here today, man, and kind of hear your story and everything. And but first off, I kind of had this conversation yesterday with another guy, and I want to get your take on it. What do you think about the Ponies going to the ACC?
Man,
how cool is that?
It's pretty good. You know, we missed our chance at the Big 12, and I think the ACC is great. We had no idea where we wanted to be.
Yeah.
Just a bigger conference.
Yeah.
But what's cool is at SMU, you can call 10 boosters and you can raise all the money that you're going to lose on your TV deal for the next 10 years.
I'm kind of pissed that they didn't get in the Big 12. Like, that was my hope, because, I mean, it's kind of like expat Southwest Conference, you know?
Absolutely.
But, you know, because now it's so weird that, you know, we played Cincinnati or Central Florida. It's just, anyways, so.
But I think we'll have a lot of cool road games.
Yeah, you will. You will have some cool road games for sure.
And it'll be really cool for basketball
when
we come to Dallas. So.
And you got Florida State coming here next year to play.
Yeah.
Although, God, you got to be a little nervous about them trying to get out of the conference. So,
yeah.
A lot of people have an opinion on that stuff. I think they screwed a bunch of kids in that deal. I mean, I know their quarterback was hurt, and that's kind of probably the ultimate decision-making power, but like...
And, you know, when you look at Liberty beating SMU out for a January 6th bowl, their logic doesn't add up with Florida State.
Yeah.
You know, Liberty kept winning, so did Florida State.
Yeah.
It's just kind of backward.
Well, and, you know, it's funny, the other thing, everybody was, you know, like on Twitter was like talking about, you know, the Georgia game. They're like, oh, Florida State, you had your chance to show up. And I was like, they just won 13 games and you told them that meant nothing.
Right.
So what is this? Like, if I'm some kid that probably comes from a background that has no money and I have a shot to go to the NFL, this is a way to change my family's life. Why would I risk this?
Absolutely.
So I don't know. But at the end of the day, that's pretty cool for the Ponies. And so it's always like kind of watching their lines and staying in tune with them. And my nephew goes there now. So it's
a little vested interest in the ponies.
Fair. So, but, well, just kind of tell us your story, man. I know you grew up in Dallas, but I'll just kind of let you like kind of tell us that. So
grew up in North Dallas. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, playing football my whole childhood, went to TCA up in Addison, mm-hmm. played there in high school, and knew that I wasn't going to play at the next level.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but I was always told by my dad, if you can live without it, do. If you can't live without it, play.
Yeah.
And I knew kind of early on that I didn't want to go to the next level and frankly wasn't good enough to go to the next level.
Yeah.
My dad's been a land broker here in DFW for 50 years.
Yeah.
So I've been around the business forever.
Yeah.
Knew that I wanted to go into real estate, but I didn't really understand enough about it.
Yeah.
I originally wanted to develop. Mm-hmm. Straight out of school, it's real tough to get into development.
Yeah.
And when I was 17, 18, 19 years old, I thought it'd be really cool to develop hotels.
Yeah.
In hindsight, you know, when things are good, you build one hotel every 2 years.
Yeah.
When things are bad, you don't build them for five.
Yeah.
So, you know, all things considered,
yeah,
I landed in the right spot.
Yeah.
But I knew I didn't want to be solely a land broker.
Yeah.
I rode that wave up and down my entire life. So, yeah. I love doing land now, but the end goal is let's go build a building and lease it.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different.
Yeah. So you get out of SMU and did you go straight to Lee & Associates at that point?
I did.
Okay. So did you interview with any other shops?
So I kind of talked to some of the big guys, right?
Yeah.
Stream, JLL, Colliers,
mm-hmm.
some of the smaller groups, Rubicon, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Smith over at ML Realty, good mm-hmm. family friend, introduced me to Adam Graham.
Okay, cool.
So met with Adam and, you know, our personalities jive pretty good.
Yeah.
And so met with him, Nathan over there. And worked with those guys as my mentors for the first several years and could not have picked a better spot.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's funny. You know, we were talking earlier today. I was like, you know, Lee & Associates is a national firm, but it doesn't have that kind of feel to it. At least not the Dallas office does, you know, and I always think of y'all as like, you know, very similar to Mercer Company, just better suits and prettier, a little prettier.
Yeah, you can thank Nathan Denton for that.
Yeah, I remember when Nathan Denton, when Haynes was over there and Nathan Denton and Haynes were working together, I go, this might be the prettiest group of guys in commercial real estate, in industrial
Definitely
real estate.
Definitely the best dressed in industrial, yeah, for sure.
I've always had great relationships with a lot of the Lee guys. It's always been good. And then, you know, we worked a lot of transactions together just in Brook Hollow, you know? So just always a lot of great things coming out of that shop. Steve Williams and all those guys. Y'all got a good group of dudes over there. So, well, okay. So you got in the market, what, about 2014?
Into 2014, yeah. September.
So that was kind of when things were, no one knew if things were changing yet, kind of. It's kind of like, I started in 2010. Things started, things were still pretty bad then. And then there were still, what was interesting is there was still inventory. So I guess that's really what I'm saying is there was inventory.
Yes.
Back then you could be like, you go make a call on the guy in Brook Hall and he's like, I need a 30,000 foot building to buy. And you're like, I'll be back tomorrow with 10 of them, you know?
Yep.
And now it's like, if someone probably says, hey man, do you want to buy I want to buy a 30,000 foot building. You're like, I'll let you know if one comes available.
Exactly.
It's a lot harder game on that type of stuff. And, that was, I always kind of call a wheelhouse deal for me was selling a 30,000 foot building. And, that changed dramatically starting 14. I'd say it probably started with 16, 17. Then it started getting a little tighter.
And obviously then with COVID.
COVID went crazy. Tighter. But it got a lot tight right before COVID because what was interesting was like, I think all these private equity shops one day decided to go to some convention and they came up with these terms like urban infill and core and last mile.
Yep.
And when they did, they went, Brook Hollow,
About as infill as it gets.
Yeah. And so all these investor groups started showing up to buy buildings about late 17, early 18. And like everybody was buying buildings down there. I'm like, where did these people come from? Like, I've been down here for years and no one would buy this stuff.
And I remember those buildings would trade for 55, 65 bucks a foot when I got in the business.
Yeah.
And I'm sure remember 45 bucks a foot.
Oh, I remember when at one point in time, Jason Mosier had a ton of, when I started, Jason Mosier had a ton of listings and he got them all because he priced them at 35 a foot. And everybody was like, you're insane. I've sold buildings in the teens per foot in Brook Hollow. I sold a building at 18 a foot in Brook Hollow.
That's incredible.
Like, it's like, when does that happen? Like, it's
and what does that building sell for today?
$100 a foot minimum.
Easily.
So, yeah, everything started creeping up. And at that point in time, Prologis was selling their assets down there. Mm-hmm. They're like, get us out of this stuff. Can you believe that?
Unbelievable.
And now, they sold. I remember, so Prologis put everybody on the song and dance train and come pitch for selling all of our Brook Hollow buildings. And I think Clint Riley ended up winning the business on that deal. And he sold like, I don't know, four or five buildings for them. And probably would have been more at some point, I think some point halfway through that, they went, oh shoot, we shouldn't do this. So, it was very, very strange. And that was about the time they bought DCT that's what's the interesting thing about that. Now, the one thing I've noticed in Brook Hollow, though, is like, it's a weird market, and I feel like the capital guys don't understand the makeup of who's a tenant and who's an owner down there. Because what I've seen is you have some capital group that's going to buy they got to buy like a 40 or 50 to kind of even make it worth doing.
Sure.
Right? Well, a 40 or 50,000 foot building in Brook Hollow is occupied by a user. They don't want to pay rent.
That's right. And that's a big building in Brook Hollow,
too. That's a big building. There's probably only like 10 buildings over 100,000 feet in Brook Hollow. And so what was interesting there, too, is like, so they buy this 50,000 foot building and then they price it at a price point where you could go to the airport and get a brand new building for the same price. So you have to take a 50 to 60 year old building, 70, year old building now, and say, okay, hey, I want the same price, but you're infill. But it's like, I can go to the airport and get a 32 clear foot building for the same price.
So, right. And this one's 16 clear with no sprinklers.
So it's interesting. I was looking at how much there's actually right now, currently a lot of vacancy on the lease side in Brook Hollow.
Same up in Valwood too.
Yeah. And it's all owned by these capital groups. And Valwood's a very big user market too for a long time. And it kind of reminds me, I don't know how much you ever messed around the design district. I stuck my toe in and I was like, this is not the place for me.
I agree.
But, you know, I looked, I want to say in 2021, you know what the vacancy rate in the design district was? 17%.
Wow.
Because everybody paid all this money for all these buildings and then they had to justify their capital. So I don't know. It's been a very interesting evolution. And I've always heard people say that they're going to tear down Brook Hollow one day and build buildings. But like, that ain't never going to happen. You got to like get, you still have these owner users all entrenched in there. So like, you got to get a lot of people on board to assemble land down there.
Of course. And imagine the basis you would have in buying a couple buildings and assembling it. You'll never be able to make the rent work.
No, absolutely not. So I don't know. It's interesting, but you work a lot of Brook Hollow area, but you kind of work up into the Stemmons and then you're also doing some national stuff too. So
I am, I would say probably 25 or 30% of my tenant rep work is out of market.
Okay.
Typically out of the state of Texas.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. It's definitely a little different than kind of, you know, boots on the ground, knocking on doors, but it has provided a lot of perspective into these different markets.
Yeah.
And I enjoy, you know, going to the Pacific Northwest and seeing how they build buildings up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, going to Reno, Nevada and figuring out how they build buildings in the mountains. It's always just been interesting to me.
So how did you pick up these kind of corporate tenants? I mean, were they like Dallas people that you like, hey, I can service your needs across the nation type thing?
So typically, you know, pick up a tenant rep deal, say, hey, I know you have 20 locations across the country, but let's use this as a trial run.
Yeah.
If you like the way I service your business, you like the way we work together, I'd love to help you on another two.
Yeah.
And you kind of grow into to get in the full portfolio business.
Yeah.
It is a lot of work being out of market, and you know how it is. You get a broker from Cincinnati emailing you for lease rates and a flyer.
Yeah.
You don't really put a whole lot into that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you got to have a good co-broker. You got to have boots on the ground.
Yeah.
But, you know, once they realize that you're representing someone who's a large national client, they typically kind of change their tune a little bit.
And so if you need to go take a deal to another market, and there's a Lee office there, are you forced to use the Lee guy there?
Not necessarily. We always have to give them the common courtesy of, hey, we're in your market. We're looking for a deal that's 50,000 feet.
Yeah.
Right. But sometimes the Lee office isn't industrial focused. Sometimes they're an office shop or they do investment sales only. And for that reason, and my promise to my client, I'm going to hire the best broker on the ground, whether it's a Lee broker or someone else.
Yeah.
So there's many times I hire Lee brokers, but there's, you know, a handful of others where I haven't.
You know, that's kind of a, you know, I've thought about that. I was like, you know, I always thought, you know, I was never at a shop where I kind of had that platform to sell. But like, I was always like, man, I could totally go, you know, I worked some out of town deals and people are like, well, how would you do it? I go, I just go interview and find like someone is, you know, I feel like that's equally as good as me or something, you know, and work with that guy. And so that's kind of the interesting thing now that we're doing. We're starting to, you know, we were just talking earlier. I tell you, we're starting to do these debt and pref deals. I'm evaluating sponsors. You know, I'm like, I'm a sponsor now. And so it's like, I'm just saying, okay, let me see this. Let me see this. How do you do this? You know, and it's like, if I can find a crack in there where I'm like, well, we do that a lot better. I can be like, okay, well, this might be a reason we won't put money into you, you know? Yeah. But a lot of the stuff we're looking at is, like I said, a single tenant net lease retail. So you're talking about a guy that's probably stamped out this building 100 times. So, but we do get a lot of stuff thrown at us now. Like I had about a $5 million land deal thrown at us. And I was like, I looked at the deck in 2 seconds and I was like, no, this guy's an experience. I can tell you right now, just looking at this deck, these people have never done this before. So that's kind of the interesting side of how our business is evolving. You know, we're always going to be a deal shop to buy buildings, you know, but you know, it's like we have another way, you know, and I got into kind of lending the money because just, you have a, you know, how many times you get an owner finance offer and the owner doesn't want to take it? And he's like, oh, I don't want to do this. And I literally started getting into loaning money by one of my listings, had a listing on Cash Road. And guy was like, hey, I want to sell this, I want to get out of it. You know, we were asking 1.7. And he was like, you know, hey, I'll take, 1.6 on it. We got an offer at 1.7 with 600,000 down at 8% interest. And this is back when money was at 4. And I was like, hey, man, you need to take this. This is a good deal, dude. Yep. And it was funny, too, because he was like, hey, man, I would lease the building. I'm like, well, if you would lease the building, why wouldn't you consider doing this? This is like a lease with a big advanced payment. Yep. And if they screw it up, you take it back from them and your basis is that much lower in the deal. But he just didn't want to do it. And I finally went, okay, man, 1.6 is the number. And he goes, yeah. I go, I'll pay it. He's like, you'll buy it? I go, yeah, I'll buy it for 1.6 and I'll do the note. So I bought it for 1.6. I signed it to the new buyer at 1.7. I borrowed $800,000 at 4% interest and then put another $200,000 in at 8% interest. So I made 4% spread on the bank's money and 8% spread on my money. Me and Romy at Cantex bought it. We still own it. And the notes, and we did a 5-year note with them. It's coming due this year. But I was like, dude, there's like a market here for this. There's a guy that doesn't want to deal with the bank at some point.
Especially now.
Yeah, especially now. So like, that's where I've owner financed a couple of my buildings. So like, hey, would you owner finance? I'm like, sure. You know? And so I think that's a very, you know, Brook Hollow, that kind of market lends itself to that kind of ability to do something like that. And so I think that's the one good thing about getting to work a market like that is you get a lot of creativity. And it's funny, on that other deal, that same deal, the guy had a shutter company and I sold his shutter company for him at the same time. He was going to throw it in the trash. I was like, no, your business might be viable. And I got to buy it from him for like $150,000.
I mean, that's creative deal making.
Yeah. 100%. So it's, I think that's the good thing about being a street broker is you got to just figure it out, man. Like you don't have a corporate handout coming down the line. That's just, you know, here's inbound deal. Here's another inbound deal, you know,
right.
And you got to go make it happen. So,
and you know, some of the big shops, they're just, you know, waiting on inbound calls to service the business. And that's great.
Yeah.
But if you ever leave one of those shops, those aren't your clients.
No.
And that's not your book of business.
No.
For me, when I was out there talking to folks originally, it was, I want to build a huge book of business.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, it'd be mine.
Yeah.
And those be my clients.
Yeah.
Not that I would ever leave Lee, but you know, you want to build something of your own.
Yeah.
Create something yourself. That's kind of what I saw in Lee.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what they're a very entrepreneurial shop, and at least the Dallas office really is. You know, I'd love, you know, you guys own a couple buildings too and stuff like that. And, you know, it's I think it's a great place to start if you really want to end up with some kind of something to hold on to down the road. Because to your point, one day you're not going to sit in the cube where they push the mail cart down and go, here's your new tenant rep.
Exactly.
And so, but let's see. So this is something I like to ask. So like, what was the worst cold call you ever made?
Oh, dude. So I was in the business maybe a month.
Yeah.
I was down there calling on Irving Boulevard in Mockingbird. It was a Friday midday. And I kind of, you know, had been told Fridays, everyone's a little happier to see you stop by.
Yeah.
So I went to test that. I walked in on a group and it seemed maybe they had just moved in. The lights were off. And I said, hello? And this big old guy, about 400 pounds, around at the corner. And he stares at me and goes, what the fuck do you want? I said, well, I'm Corbin with Lee & Associates. This building just sold down the street. I thought you might want to know about it. He said, do you know how to fucking read? I said, well, yeah. You know, I was a little offended. Just got out of that
scene.
Of course I can read.
Yeah.
He goes, well, it says no fucking soliciting on the door.
Yeah.
And I had my comp in my hand and I went to set it on the desk. He said, don't you put it down. And I looked at him and I looked at the door and I threw it on the desk and I just walked out. And I was, you know, 3-4 weeks in the business, I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, but if that had happened to me today, it'd be a totally different story.
Yeah.
Of course, I can't read. I'm in sales.
Yeah.
You know, you can play that off a little bit better.
So it's funny. Jeff always taught us this. When you got the no soliciting one, he goes, go, oh, I thought it said no smoking. I'm not smoking. I thought you just didn't want me to smoke in your building.
Right. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. It's so weird. Did you ever do a deal with that guy though?
No. I kept dripping on him. I think he was just kind of a local warehouse manager for a larger company.
Yeah. So
he didn't make the decision anyway. Yeah. He just happened to be the guy I crossed paths with.
Yeah. So. No, it's interesting how people will, they'll kind of shit on you for a long time. Then eventually they're like, okay, you know, I mean, that's kind of part of it too. Like, you know, they're like, you know, you don't get it the first shot, you know? And so, you got to kind of go, you got to be consistent and making your calls and going in there and seeing that guy over and over again. And, you know, it's that's really your branding, right? That's you're branding yourself as the guy that's going to show up every month, yep. you know, in his office and be like, I got to like talk to this guy at some point, you know? Right. And, so that's how you end up winning a lot of business though.
And you know, no fault of his own. You catch a guy on a bad day.
Yeah.
You just never know, right?
Yeah.
They don't have a need. You know, he's getting a divorce, whatever it might be. You just stay consistent.
Well, and, you know, I always thought this. I was like, man, like business owners are thinking about running their business. We're thinking about real estate constantly. And they're like, I don't have to think about this for like 5 years. Like, what do you want to talk about? Like, this is, you know, I got to get orders out or, you know, whatever it is. And we're like, no, man, real estate's going on constantly because in our world it is, you know. Right. So it's I always try to be mindful of that. But, you know, I think the cool thing about what we get to do, though, is walk in all these warehouses and see how all these different people make money. You know, it's like things you would never think of. You're like, you actually make money off that? Like, that's so weird.
I always, when I'm pitching a tenor up deal, I'll say, I have to know, how'd you get in the fastener business?
Right.
How'd you get into selling nuts and bolts?
Yeah.
You know, it's always interesting. Did you just find something that had margin?
Yeah.
Or was it a family business? I always find it interesting how these people end up in the insulation business or whatever it is.
Right.
And so, you know, when they send their financials out and you get to review them, you're like, you make how much money selling fasteners? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. This sounds like a pretty good business.
No kidding.
No. Yeah. It was the seeing all those different things. Just, I think it really elevates your business acumen where it's like, okay, man, like, you know, you eventually understand like, okay, this guy has to do this to get this out of the product. This is why he really needs a facility like this. And that's the interesting thing about industrial. I don't know. It could be very well same in other asset classes, but like, I don't feel like any of our buildings are really the same. You know, I feel like there hasn't been any congruency to buildings until probably the last 10 years of generation of building, you know, because you'll see a building built and it's like they did something weird and you're like, what? Like, who the hell thought to do that? It's so stupid now, you know, for some reason they did it at that point in time, but it's like, you know, and then you got to figure out how to make all these things work with like, especially the older buildings that we sell because they're kind of functionally obsolete now, you know, compared to what's out there. So, you ever been in any real dicey situations where you're like, oh man, I might be fixing to get jumped here?
You know, luckily I haven't had any really bad ones, but I know of some in our office. I mean, Stephen Williamson walked in on a guy in a space he was just about to lease. He was doing heroin.
Oh God.
And, you know, had to usher this guy out of the building. The guy was coming to sign the lease in 10 minutes.
Oh, God.
You know, that's back when we had a bunch of vacancy and that stuff, you know, riffraff happened.
Yeah.
With vacancy as low as it was the last couple of years, and you know, to an extent still is, some of that riffraffy stuff we don't see as often, but I haven't had one where I felt super in danger, but I've, you know, been touring in Hines and watched someone pick up a prostitute and watch people sell drugs out in the corner. I mean, unfortunately you're in an industrial park, so that stuff happens.
That's where it happens.
Yep.
I did an office deal like 2 years ago. You know, just kind of a referral thing, but it was like a 20,000 foot office deal. So I was like, this is worth it. And man, it was so nice, like showing up to a building and there aren't needles on the ground or something.
And condoms.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, God.
I remember vividly, I was looking at a building with Keenan Cook years ago down in Hines. And there was, you know, some shrapnel from the night before on the ground. And Keenan saw it as he drove up and just parked on top of it. And so when my client showed up, he didn't see any of it because his truck was parked over.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just kind of the lay of the land down
there.
Well,
you know, that's kind of just, you know, prepping your listing to make sure it looks right for everybody, you know.
Absolutely. Get there a couple of minutes early, hide the needles.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. So let me ask you this, kind of like, you know, what's kind of like your routine of things? Like what are kind of the habits you do on a daily that make you, you know, have gotten you to the level of success that you are? Like, what do you think you're kind of like your anchors of every day that you kind of get into?
Sure. I mean, I was told early on, this is not a job. This is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
If you're not constantly thinking about what you have working today and what you're trying to have working in the future, you're probably not cut out of the right cloth. So I think a lot of it is early mornings prior to having a baby.
Yeah.
I loved being in the office at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
It's quiet. I can get my day ready. And by 8:15, when some other people are coming in, I'm out the door to cold call.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a baby, obviously that changes. I like to spend time with her in the morning.
Yeah.
And so I get to the office, you know, around 7:30.
Yeah.
But if you plan the day before when you're leaving the office for the day ahead, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
If you go in the office at 7:30 and don't have a plan for the day, you're already behind.
Yeah.
So it's just consistency.
Yeah.
And knowing that, you know, some days you're not going to have a ton of success working your program.
Yeah.
But that if you continue to work the program, you're going to have success in the long run.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. That's an interesting thing, that just really prepping your day before, you know. I think that's what makes like the greatest quarterbacks in the world, right? They just prep. So that's what, like, you know, my son, he plays inside linebacker, and we always talk about Luke Kuechly and how great of a linebacker that guy was. But that guy was a maniac in watching film, and he could just tell you everything that was going to happen before it happened. So as soon as the snap went off, he'd watched that film so much, he just knew exactly where the play was going. Yep. And, I think it's the same thing, right? Like if you prep so much in, you know, understanding your market that you work, you know, understanding your clients' needs and all that stuff, and you're just constantly thinking about it, I think it just makes everything so much, it makes it very easy. Right. It's not easy because the amount of work you're doing, but, you know, some people like to think, you know, that you probably had this situation where they're like, find me this building. You're like, here it is. They're like, that was too easy.
You're like, well, no, I track everything. I know this.
You don't understand all the work that went in behind it.
Right.
You know. So that's a big key. Like, you know, that was for me. Like when I started, I was always in the office really early. Just, you know, to your point, getting out of the building, ready to cold call, you know, at, you know, 8 a.m., 8:30. You know, like I'd be at my first cold call at 8:30.
Yep.
You know, and that way you can call till lunch and get after it. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, you talked about it being a lifestyle. And, you know, the other thing I noticed too, like, man, when you go on vacation, it don't stop.
Never.
And you're in transactional work, right? And there's usually a fuse lit, right? There's a lease expiration. There's a sale contract, an inspection period ending. And man, this is something my brother taught me. It was just like, hey man, you're going to go on vacation, you're going to lose a deal. Just get over it. Like, my brother actually had one of his clients who happened to be at the hospital when he was having a kid, like randomly, and then was like, hey, do you have a minute to talk? Like, he was there for something else. And he was like, hey, do you have a minute to talk? He's like, I'm having my child.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, but I don't think they care.
It never stops.
They don't care. They're like, oh, you're on vacation? Well, you know, you're like, they love to be like, oh, easy money. What's up, man?
It must be easy. Yeah. Like commercial real estate broker.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, you know, we always go, well, we're hiring. You want to join?
Yeah. Like, you come do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're compensated very well when we transact.
Yeah.
But what people don't see that aren't in our business is all the things we do prior and post that deal getting done that we never get paid for.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, if you do a tenant rep assignment, guess what? You're now the property manager.
Because
they don't want to call the property manager. They want to call you. Because they're like, well, you got me into this. I'm like, sir, I just leased you a building for your business.
Right. I didn't freeze your pipes.
But at the end of the day, you end up facilitating those things because that's the customer service aspect of it, right?
Totally.
You know, you're like, hey, don't call me for this. Call me when the lease is up. You know, that's not going to work
either.
You know, so, but yeah, no, there is a lot of, you know, just customer service after the fact. You know, it's like, I got a client and, you know, he ended up subleasing three different tenants within his building. Like, he'd put it all together. Well, who wrote the leases on it? Isabella did.
Right.
You know, and like, that's not, I got to pay Isabella for her time, but I don't charge him for it, you know? Well, what's something about you that no one really knows?
Oh man, that's tough. You know, in our business, we have to be a big personality.
Yeah.
But I really do love the time where I can sit there and quiet and just kind of decompress.
Yeah.
And, you know, this business, it'll wear on you a little bit.
Yeah.
And I've always thought I had thick skin, but I've learned to grow it doing this. You know, a lot of people look at successful brokers and say, oh, well, you know, they deal with getting rejected all the time, but they just go about their day. It's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of being weathered and a little salty.
Yeah.
But that stuff, you know, when you lose an assignment or you don't get hired, like, you take that to heart, but it's, you know, those losses sting, but they're what motivates you to move forward.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, no, it is. It's a, when you feel like you had something kind of like, you know, you did everything, you know, we've all been on that pitch where you're like, I did everything right, you know, and you still lose.
Right.
It's frustrating because sometimes you find out it was just like, oh, well, he was going to hire his brother-in-law no matter what.
Exactly. Like you were just in there to get the info.
He was literally getting the info from you to go give to someone,
right.
You know? And so that's pretty painful, you know? But, and what sucks is you have to go back in and see that guy again.
Absolutely.
Because you're kind of like, well, when his brother-in-law screws it up, you know, I'll be here, you know, or maybe they hire another broker who gets it done. Who cares? But things change, right? Like, I would always tell guys, I'd walk in, they'd be like, hey, look, you know, I work with so-and-so. I go, man, I'm just here to audition for second place.
Right.
You know, like,
absolutely.
Like, you know, just let me be the bridesmaid, you know? And, life happens, right?
And oftentimes it's better to be the second broker on a project.
Yeah. That is no doubt. Like, man, you see, and usually that comes from a, kind of like an unreal. So I think that works on two sides of the equation, right? I think it works on the listing side where you have a very unrealistic landlord or seller. And the first guy works mm-hmm. it and probably got them the offer that they needed to take, but they weren't ready to take it. So they fire him, hire you, and get pretty much the same offer and end up taking it.
Yep.
Because they're like, okay, well, I did everything that I could. So it sucks for the first guy. But to your point, being second in, it's not always a bad thing. On the flip side of it is, I see this, you know, you see this in buyer and tenant rep. And going into the deal, you know, some buyers, you know, and some tenants, they're chiselers, man. They want to just negotiate, mm-hmm. negotiate. And they lose that deal because they're like, hey, so there's another deal. And they're like, commercial real estate guy, broker me, you know, whatever. Well, then they lose it. And then they're like, oh shit. So the next one, they don't screw around.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about like Andre, right? Like client of mine that we both know very well and trying to work a deal with right now. And so when we bought his building on Union Bower, we were like $50,000 apart. He's like, I think I want to go in like $50,000 lower, like on the third round of negotiation. And, you know, they're telling us there's another deal and all this stuff. I just told him, I said, well, you must be willing to lose in order to win. So you willing to lose it? He goes, yeah, I think I am. I was like, okay.
All right. There's our answer.
and we got it. So, but being, you know, it's the same thing with tenants, man. Some of them will chisel in the space that they got, you know, they're like, I need this, this, and this. And then they lose it. You know, the landlord's like, hey, I got another tenant. Like,
right. You know, you got to move.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of like what we were talking about earlier out there was like, you know, the deal you're working in with Rich, where it's like, hey, you have the cheapest, you have a gross lease at what net rates are.
Right.
Like, you need to do this, man. Like, and that's been I'd say the challenge of being a tenant rep lately is that you just, it's kind of hard to like show your value. You know what I mean? Where, like we discussed, like back when we started in this business, you could kind of kick some teeth in. Yep. and really, you know, do some stuff. But now it's a little harder. And then you got to convince the client that this is a good deal, you know, and they're just staring down the barrel of a pretty big market increase. So
that's, and I get it, right? At some point, you know, you can't afford to operate at X.
Right.
But if you can pass that through to your customer, that's the way you got to do it.
You know, it's interesting. We bought this property down in Marble Falls and, one of the tenants it's a building, they're a cabinet shop and a barbecue restaurant.
Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, we go in there, everybody's paying like six gross and the market down there's 12 to 14 net. And I was like, I went into him, I said, hey, look, you're one, $9 net. Okay. And they were like, we're just going to shut down. I didn't even think of this. So Joey in there, our asset manager, he goes and eats barbecue at every barbecue restaurant in Marble Falls and gets their prices. And he goes back to him. He goes, man, do you realize your prices are 40% below everybody else's? He's like, you need to up your prices, man.
Yeah.
Like,
and you can afford your new rent.
Yeah.
What do you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you should have been upping your prices years ago. You left all this, you know. So anyways, we did a short-term lease for him to kind of let him absorb that. But, you know, to your point, you know, this is all getting passed on at some point, you know, and or it's been being passed on and you just had cheap rent for a long time. Right. And now it's coming to roost. So you just got to deal with it. So, but that's the tenant rep side of things. That's where, you know, I still work a couple renewals and stuff. And it's just like, man, like, I know you're paying five, it's 10 now, you know,
Those are tough conversations.
They're tough conversations. It's not received very well. You better have your data to show them the market. So, hey, here's all the market. Do you want to go look at it? And they look at the pricing, they go,
huh. And then they do the math in their head what it costs to move. And all of a sudden, and the that renewal doesn't look as bad.
No, it doesn't. So that's unfortunately where we're at. But I think that's just a product of Dallas Fort Worth being the superpower that it's turning into. So
I agree.
Well, here's one other question I like to ask. What's your favorite book that you read?
The Last Lecture.
The Last Lecture.
Have you ever read it?
Uh-uh.
It is written by a professor at Carnegie Mellon who it's a book to his kids. And he's diagnosed with terminal cancer and he writes this book about his last lecture. And it's really interesting to get the perspective of a guy that knows he's about to die.
Yeah.
And I honestly should probably read it again. I haven't read it in a couple of years, but that to me was pretty eye-opening as far as perspective into the world.
Yeah.
My career is important to me.
Yeah.
But it's not everything.
No.
I love my family. I love my daughter.
And yeah.
It was just interesting perspective from a guy that was a professor his whole life. You know, I think he wishes he could have spent more time with his family, knowing that he's, you know, kind of facing the end. So,
yeah, it was, you know, what was it? Will was talking about, he listened to a podcast of a broker, I think out in California, and just talked about how he worked forever and, you know, but like didn't have a relationship with his family. Like, there's some people like that. They just didn't have a relationship with their clients and they just forget about their family.
Right.
And you know, it's fleeting, man. It's like, I see I'm on the back half of like seeing my kids walk out the door and it's like, man, it's going to be over soon. So it's like, yeah, it's like, I told my wife earlier this year, I was like, I need to take my son to school every day this semester because he gets a car next year. Mm-hmm. I ain't ever gonna get that time again, you know?
That's true.
And, so that's a big thing I try to do as much as I can. But man, it just, God, it goes quick, dude. And then you get caught up in this business and you want to have the success in it, but you know, there's a lot of success that needs to be had at home, you know. And it's, you know, money's money. You can always go make money. I saw this the other day. I thought this was pretty cool. It was like talking about how you're juggling five things in life: your family, your health, your spiritual life, your work. God, there's one other thing I can't remember what it was. Oh, your maybe your finances or something. And work. You're juggling these five things. Work is a rubber ball. Everything else is a glass. You can drop the ball and it's going to bounce back up.
I like that.
You drop the glass on your family, it shatters, you know?
Yep.
You know, and I'm kind of at the age where I've seen a lot of people get divorced, you know? And it's just, it's like, man, like what made you want to go be able to have to spend half the time with your kids? Like, I couldn't.
I mean, and at that point, there's no amount of money that buys you happiness.
No. Uh-uh. You can't get that back.
No.
So, yeah, you know, there's no deal. There's no success that you're going to buy or get that's going to outweigh that. So.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's, you know, keep it in perspective. Keep it consistent with, you know, with work, but keep it consistent with the family too, man. Like, it's going to be there. You know what?
Right.
And if it's not, whatever. Like, there's always another deal.
Right.
So, well, let me ask you that. This is one other question I always like to ask. Like, do you have like is there any kind of software you like to use that you're like any kind of like anything like that? That's just like, hey man, this really changed like a lot of things for me. Like, you know, we use Asana. Like that was something that was really helpful for me. And so I don't know, you got anything like that?
So we use an interesting CRM. It's called Slick Cactus. Trey Fricke built it from scratch.
Oh, wow.
And it's really It's made for commercial real estate, right? We've tried them all.
Yeah.
We've tried RE Apps, which was kind of a lead national application. We've looked at, you know, everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. And none of it's 100% geared toward commercial real estate.
Yeah.
Slick Cactus is great. I love that. But for me, in cold calling,
yeah,
the Zoom Info is it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how they're so accurate.
Yeah.
But if you go look up your name or my name right now,
yeah,
I guarantee you they have everything on you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I call people all the time. They tell me, how'd you get this number? Like, I do a lot of research and yeah, I'll tell you exactly where I got it if you meet with me.
Yeah.
You know,
there you go.
But everything's public record.
Yeah. No, it is. It's
just a matter of finding where it all is.
It's so cool that we have that stuff now. Cause man, when we started, you didn't really have anything like that. It was like, you just had to go in and hope you could get past the gatekeeper and hope you could get a card and all that stuff. And you'd get an email and then, you know, half the time, you know, it was, they had a fake card. They'd give this card out.
A guy that didn't exist.
Yeah. So yeah, that's we've been using Reonomy a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Yeah. And, you know, we like to look at it because it has pretty good accurate information on the debt maturity. It has a lot of owner contacts too, but I don't think it's as tight as Zoom Info. But it's cool looking at the debt maturities because then it's like, okay, hey, this guy's got a note coming due in 12 months. Like, yep. So he's coming off 4, going to go to 8. Like, kind of got a decision to make. Or this guy doesn't have a note at all. This guy might be a great candidate for owner financing. Absolutely. You know? And so that's been something we've really used here and I really enjoy. And, you know, I bought a building in Oklahoma City and, you know, we bought it for like 1.1. It's probably worth 2 something, but I found it off market through Reonomy, got the owner contact, you know, called them, got a hold of the president of the company, he's a oil company. They're like, yeah, we're shutting that division down. You want to buy the building? I'm like, yep. And so, boom, we got it. It's funny. We bought the building, we leased it out. And then one of the guys that used to work for the company we bought it from, that our tenant defaulted and we had to get him out. He worked for another very similar operation. He's like, I want that building. I know exactly what it is. Came in and leased it from us.
Man, this whole business is hard work and timing.
Yeah.
Right.
It is.
A lot of timing is a lot of it.
Yep.
That's why you have to stay so consistent when you're going on these groups.
Well, and that's the consistency of talking about, like, you know, we've probably stole clients from each other multiple times, right? And yeah, it's just, we were both calling on the same frequency, but it might have been the day you showed up or I showed up was actually real estate day to day.
Exactly. And they were like, thinking about it.
They're like, oh, man, I'm glad you're here. Like, here you go. And it's like, damn it.
Yep. And everyone's been on the wrong side of that
coin. Oh, yeah. It happens. That's the business. If you don't like competing, this isn't for you.
Right. 100%. And, you know, that's an interesting comment. Like, back to the football days.
Yeah.
Football taught me a ton about life.
Yeah.
Right. You never quit.
Yeah.
You never quit.
It's, I remember, so I coached my son's football team from kindergarten through sixth grade. And it was an awesome time. I had the same kids, like, all the way through up. So it's so cool now watching them in high school. Like, there's like, it's my whole team on the field, you know, it's so cool. But I remember after his last game, man, it was, they lost in the championship game, like 12-7, really close game, really good game. And, it made me think, I don't know if you remember those t-shirts. They were like sports t-shirts, but they said like football is life. The rest is just details. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I wrote out this whole thing about his football career at that point. I was like, football is life. The rest is just details. You know, you're gonna have all these trials and tribulations, you know, and then you got to work on a team too. And then you got to be there for that guy to do that. But then you got to be there for yourself. You got to go home and do the things yourself too, to make these things work. You know, commercial real estate brokerage isn't, I wouldn't say more of a team sport, it's kind of an individual sport, but at the same time, you know, it's on you to know your market very well so that when one of your cadre has a deal.
Yep.
You know, you can help them out and be like, hey, man, here's this building. Here's some info for you, you know? And then you expect that to be reciprocated, you know? And if that guy's not keeping up with that kind of stuff, you know, you're kind of like, come on, man, you need to pull your weight,
right?
You know? So, but I always related that. I was like, you know, football's life. The rest is just details. You know, you learn a lot in that, you know, you kind of learn who you are, you know,
absolutely,
at some point. Because you're, it's not combat, but it kind of is, you know?
Right. And, you know, you get hit in the face and you're taking another snap here in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's just like cold calling, right?
Yeah.
You get kicked in the teeth and, man, you go to the next space and keep on going.
Yeah. It reminds me of
when in Fight Club, when Brad Pitt says, "How much do you know about yourself? You've never been in a fight." You know,
that's a fact.
That's a true fact. Absolutely. Man. You don't know where you stand if you've never been tested. Nope. So, well, let's wrap it up on that, man. I think it's very interesting to hear your perspective on a lot of stuff. We just got a really nice transaction done together. We brokered. That was a good deal. We snuck it in there right before Christmas. So we keep them commission splits high.
Closed early, baby.
So, but yeah, well, thanks for coming on, man. Love to have you back again too. And, you know, kind of get your thoughts on things as they move forward this year. You know, hopefully 2024 is better than last year. I think it will be. So, but thanks again for coming. And, we'll see you soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.